A character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Trace. I am Dusty Giebing. This is the beautiful person joining me today. His name is Matt Fanatic. Say hello, Matt.
Hello, Matt. I am one of the beautiful people. I am like the Madison Rain of the early beautiful people. I am that good looking.
3 weeks in a row you do that joke. I say hello, blah, blah. You say exactly that. Yeah. We are the Three Stooges of audio. But anyway, what we are doing today is reviewing the TNA Impact show for January 26th or some day like that. And what a doozy of a show this is. But before we get into it, ask a random question. Our production values have gone to the wayside here, so I'm just going to do it. Ask a random question. Matt, who's going to win the Royal Rumble?
WWF, what is that? I'm going to go with Chris Jericho, and if it's not him, it's Randy Orton, but it seems fairly obvious that Jericho wins it. I don't know how he's going to do it with, you know, unless he actually wrestles for the first time or does something physical, but I could see him coming in 29th, which would be great for me in one of my pools. So he comes in 29, throws over, you know, two guys that are near the ropes or something, and then come on, babies it all the way to WrestleMania.
Sure. Okay.
And who are you going with?
Just to be different, I'll go with Randy Orton as my serious pick. That would make logical sense and be a simple, basic storytelling element. We'll go with Randy Orton, and for whatever reason, I see him picking number two and going the whole distance. I don't know why.
Could happen. He is a big fan of number two, so that would work with for Randy Orton.
Walked into it. Well, anything else before we get started here? Do you have a random question for me, Matt?
I do have a random question for you. Dusty, what is the one T-shirt that you wanted when you were a kid, wrestling-related, that your parents would not buy you?
Interesting. I thought I could tell my Tatanka story here, but I can't. You know what? Probably the Roddy Piper Hot Rod shirt. He was my first favorite. Loved the guy. But my parents refused to get, like, WWF merchandise. They thought it was a waste of money. Until they finally gave in and got me WWF action figures. At which point, I was all in on those. But, yeah, the Piper shirt. Hot Rod.
I hear you. Mine was, I always wanted the Hulk Hogan rippable, you know, T-shirt with the three things in the back. Yeah, when I was a kid, one of the other kids in my class had one, and I'm like, oh, that's so great. And I don't think I actually ever got a wrestling shirt until, I think, the first shirt I can remember, unless I had one when I was a real little kid that I don't. But I got the DDP, the blue diamond with his head in the middle of it. I think it was, like, his first T-shirt. Said like SoFi 5 on the back or something. So yeah, I didn't get a T-shirt till like that would have been like 96, maybe even 97 when I went to a show. So Yeah, that was it for me, feeling the bang.
Wow, that's impressive. He was the people's champion.
He was. He went from the outhouse to the penthouse to the outhouse to YRG.
He went from driving the pink Cadillac for the Honky Tonk Man to the world title. So.
And the Battle Bowl ring, yeah.
Indeed. He beat a whole bunch of nobodies for that Battle Bowl ring. That was fucking hilarious. Great book in WCW. But anywho. So, before we get started on this Impact Wrestling review, there was something that happened before the show officially started. I didn't see it, but you did. What was it?
Yes. In the show before Impact, and I don't know if it was jail or how to, you know, 110 ways to kill your girlfriend or whatever they show on Spike, but my DVR started like 45 seconds, I guess, before the actual show, and in the end of whatever the show was before it, they cut in with a commercial for Impact, and it was like, Bully Ray, wreaking havoc. Tonight, he teams with Bobby Roode against Jeff Hardy and the Storm Man, James Storm. And I'm like, okay, so I'm like, all right, they announced that. That makes sense. You know, they have a main event ahead of time. I'm like, okay, they, you know, must have put it on the website or something. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think's happening. I'm like, okay, they announced this. No big deal. And nothing happens during the show to lead me to think that anything else until, which we'll get to, a half hour in when Sting says, hey, we're going to have a match tonight, and it's a tables match, a tag team tables match. And I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, you just told me before the show started what it was.
Right.
So if you're running a show, and I always say it, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but and my wife, I tell my wife about this, and she's like, yeah, but you know a lot about this stuff more than the average person. I go, well, yes, but I'm not, honey, I'm not getting a paycheck to do this.
Right.
So if you were paying me, you would know this. You have to decide if you're TNA, is your show going to be live, as in you present everything as live, or is it a tape show like a sitcom where at the end of the hour that says you get the previews for next week's show, which if they have it in the can for next week, then at the end of this show, they should show a 30-second thing when it goes off that says to make you tune in for next week. You can't have it both ways.
Yes. And I've always said TNA should just accept that they're a taped show and show little clips of next week's matches. What's wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, and if they went the whole thing, they were giving it titles. They gave the show titles, like, for 5 years to tell you what was going to happen on the show, and now they've cut out that, and now they do this crap. Like, something like that just drives me completely insane because it makes no sense. And like I said, why can I figure it out, and you're paying these people – you know, probably close to a six-figure salary to write your shows if you're the head guy, if you're Vince Russo or Hi Bruce Pritchard. Nice listening to me. Okay, get your shit straight, would you? Because this shouldn't happen.
No. No, you figure, like, okay, that makes sense because they've been building for that for 2 months now. It makes sense that those four would wrestle each other in that type of situation. Well, okay, they planned ahead a week ahead. Okay, that's great. And to have Sting, and you're right, everything up to that point is like, okay, that's what they're doing, and that's why they're fighting each other, because they know they're going to have a match with each other, and they're angry at each other anyway. So that's why they're fighting. And just Sting, and here's another thing about Sting. He is obviously with the baby faces. To the point where he should not be an authority figure. I know I'm taking it way too seriously here, but, you know, like, the authority figure shouldn't be in bed with either side. That's just as bad as having a heel authority figure. So there's my rant on Sting. That's always been my argument against Teddy Long, too. Teddy Long is obviously pro babyface, and that's not good either. So...
Yeah, we need a Jack Tunney back, somebody just behind the curtain who comes out when things happen, whether, and it's always going to be the bad guy doing something, but, or if the
sure.
baby face goes too far. But we went from what, Hamburglar Sting to NWO Sting, and tonight, everybody, we got Canadian Tuxedo Sting. We got the blue jeans. We're Denim Dan from Super Troopers. That's what I thought of. He's got his dungarees jacket. So he is looking good with the black gloves. I don't know if they make denim gloves, but he should have went with that.
I don't know.
So,
he loves
love,
though. He's not giving those up for love nor money. So, man, that was an elderly phrase. How old do you have to use that phrase? Anyway. So the show proper starts with a video package of last week's crap. And then we go backstage, Jeff Hardy brawling with Bully Ray. The two are brawling. At one point, there's a miniature broom. This is absolutely my favorite part of the show. Hardy hits him with a miniature broom that wouldn't hurt an infant, and Bully Ray, oh, God! Oh! So, that was, yeah. That was some Ed Wood shit right there. In any event, they brawl outside the building. Bobby Roode in his pickup truck, and I've got a small rant about that I'll do right now. His gimmick is that he's supposed to be rich or something. What's he doing with a pickup truck? He should have like a Cadillac or something.
But it was a Dodge extended cab white pickup truck because he's a good guy, so it's white. And why is TNA breaking stuff backstage? I know they're on a budget. They don't need to be like, you know, kicking stuff over and breaking light fixtures. Janice has them by the balls on stuff. They don't need to be brawling backstage, busting stuff up. But, yeah, Bobby Roode pulls up in the pickup truck. And I don't know what was supposed to happen, but he was like, put him in the truck. Put him in the truck. And I'm like, in the inside? Are you going to open up the kid's door and put him in the back seat? Or are they going to put him in the back of it? I wasn't really quite sure what they were going to do if they put him in the truck. But that didn't happen.
Yeah. Are they going to drive him out into the desert and bury him with Ric Flair back there? I don't know.
He would be back next week.
Mm-hmm. I was yelling at my screen the entire time, where's security? Where's the police officers? I mean, in the late 90s, Steve Austin would do something completely innocuous, like attack somebody. Something that happens all the time in wrestling. And the cops would haul him away for some inexplicable reason that made me want to jam needles into my eyeballs. But these four can brawl backstage, brawl outside in the parking lot, and there's no sign of anybody trying to break it up. I don't understand.
Right. And one of the other things that just drove me nuts about this is Bully Ray pulls out the Scott Steiner pipe, you know, that he always uses.
Yep.
And instead of, you know, holding it on the end of the pipe and hitting him with it and, you know, pulling the hit so it works, he holds it, he takes the pipe and he holds his hand in the middle of the pipe around it, and then he basically punches him with his fist while he's holding the pipe ever so gently. If you can't use the weapon and make it look good, then don't use it. There's plenty of other things.
Just use your fist, you know? That's
yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, so basically, as In Living Color would say, hated it! I appreciate the idea, but the execution I thought was pretty terrible on this.
James Storm makes a save there, and then Canadian Tuxedo Sting comes in and makes a save after they beat up Storm a little bit, so the heels got the advantage again on Storm.
Making the save for the baby faces, that's great.
Really
he's
the bat.
I get what they were going for. They wanted a hot open with action, so one thing that I was very pleased about is that there was no announcing whatsoever during this whole segment. It was really nice. For a brief minute, I could imagine a world without Tanae and Taz. So, thumbs up for that, at least.
Yeah, always a plus. The less Tanae, the better. And so yeah, we got that, and then we got match number one. So hot start right off the bat. We got the match that they announced during the main event last week.
Yeah.
And Velvet Sky was coming to the ring, and when Velvet was getting in the ring, I was like, okay, this is a squash match because her opponent didn't get an intro and she's standing in the ring.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who is that? Because the camera was from, like, the behind the fans or whatever. It was a wide shot. And I'm like, who's Velvet facing? I couldn't figure it out. No, it was Christy Hemme wearing almost like a wrestling gear outfit from until you saw her completely up close. But looking like she definitely – I thought it was Velvet against some no-name person or whatever. But it was the triple threat with Tara and Mickie James for number one contender knockout match. Or the knockout championship at the pay-per-view. So winner faces Gail Kim.
Yeah, a couple thoughts on this. First of all, they really take their women's wrestling seriously here, and I'm proud of them. I'm seriously, unironically proud of them for having the balls to treat it seriously, unlike WWE, who just has like five-second women's matches where Kelly thinks she's a luchador and does like 52 things she can't physically do. Built this up for a week and really built this up for months, you know, headed in this direction. All the people made logical sense. Everything was fine there. Christy Hemme, great camera work in TNA because they went up her about like three times during the course of the show. Very much appreciated on that. And yeah, also, at first, I didn't know it was Christy in the ring. I was trying to do the mental math of who the jobber in the women's division was, you know? I didn't remember at first that they had set this match up last week, so I'm trying to figure out in my head, who's the jobber? Angelina, you know? Who's Velvet beating here this week? So, yeah, I'm glad you said that. I had the same thought.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the Mexicans. I was like, too big to be Rosita, and I'm like, and then I was like, maybe it's Sarita. That's who I thought, like, you know, if I had to guess before I saw it, I'd be like, okay, that's Sarita. But yeah, that was it. Mickie James for this match, I thought she's back into her stalker Trish Stratus shape days, looking real good. Taz let us know Mickie's all about the dungarees. And, and Tanae made fun of him for that because Tanae's the coolest guy in the room, so make fun of the other guy.
Oh,
The Velvet's, apparently her new move is the discount double check because every time she hits any offensive move, okay, she's letting us know that she's saving some money on her car insurance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Much appreciated. I almost think she doesn't know what to do with herself as a babyface. She really just seems like, okay, hit a move, pander to the crowd. Like, yeah, you're better as a heel, aren't you? So, there's that. The match goes about 10 minutes. It's good work. It's not great work, but a good, solid match between three women that can actually work. Hi, Kelly. And in the end, a surprise winner, but it made sense that Tara won. They've kind of been doing Tara and Miss Tessmacher against Madison Rain and Gail Kim for a while, so it made sense that she would win. Your thoughts on the match? I give it a thumbs up.
I thought it was a good match. Velvet Sky, obviously the worst person in there. Anytime something did look clunky, it was because she was not in the right spot or she comes in late to make the save or, you know, get ready for the next thing. She's always a step off. But good all around. I thought the finisher just looked nasty where I think Tara drops Velvet on top of Mickey on a move and it looked like she just got killed.
Oh, I hopped out of the seat for that one. That looked pretty brutal.
Yeah, totally a nasty look, and they replayed it. It still looked bad. It looked like she dropped right on her face.
Yep.
I was surprised Tara won. I was expecting the Mickie James rematch. That made sense. But the whole Tara thing, you mentioned they were doing the tag route. We didn't get any Madison Rain on this show, which was a little surprising, I guess, but she did take the beating in the cage match last week, so not a big deal.
Yeah, That's what I thought, and I had that in my notes. She was selling the cage match loss. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
real quick, though, speaking of disappearing wrestlers, we haven't seen Devon and the Pope since the pay-per-view. Scott Steiner disappeared. Ric Flair has been spotty. Who else?
Mr. Kennedy or Mr.
Kennedy.
Anderson. Testmacher wasn't in for this set of tapings.
Yep.
Were the Mexicans in at all?
Nope.
All four of them?
Nope.
And I don't know what they taped for Explosion, the worldwide show they run. But I did read, I don't know on if it was Powell talking about how they are kind of deciding ahead of time who they're not bringing in for tapings to cut back on money, because, I don't know, these people get paid by the date or by the appearance.
Yep.
So it makes sense, although it is kind of weird that some people aren't on for like 3 full weeks in a row since they do tape so many at a time.
Yeah,
especially Pope Devon. Pope Devon, they blow off the feud. Testmacher, you would expect her to be – you thought it was weird last week. They had, like, Tara and Velvet talking to Mickey James after her win, and I was like, shouldn't it be Tara and Testmacher?
Yeah.
But if that's what they want to do, that's fine. And if that's what they need to do to make money or not lose money, I guess that's the way to go. There are a lot of people that you notice missing. Abyss wasn't on this taping. They did talk about him last week. I don't think they talked about him on this week's show, but
no.
I'm not sure where they're going with that. It's weird when people win at the pay-per-view, I guess, and then they don't go about it because
yeah.
He beats Bully Ray. It's a big deal. And then we hear nothing of him. So
like
maybe he's back in the mental institution. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am all for Abyss falling into a Infinity Foot hole, having that be a storyline. I fully advocate that. Just never mention him again. Don't fire him. Just let him sit at home and have him never appear anywhere ever again. That would be great. In any event, backstage, Gail Kim cuts a quick promo talking to, I guess, Jason Hervey. I learned that last week. Congratulating Tara and talking about their history together, setting up a match at Against All Odds. You have to give them credit. They have several matches already lined up for Against All Odds, whereas WWE has about 8 people scheduled for the 30-man Royal Rumble. So,
headed
opposite directions as far as long-term planning goes.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know what Gail Kim and Tara's past was. I know they were both in WWF, but...
Mm-hmm.
Gail Kim did nothing memorable the whole time she was there except for winning the title her first night in the company way back when.
Yep.
Finding out JBL put nude photos all over the bus in Japan and quitting. So I don't really know their history besides they were in another company. But, hey, they can play off it and people might go, oh, yeah, there must have been a big feud. Like, Tara was really good in when she was with Vince. I thought she was very underrated and had actually some great, her best work was with her and Stevie Knight Heat, but that was seems like it might have been 10 years ago now. So setting up that good stuff, and then did you see the Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and they ran an ad for with all the knockouts and one of your favorites, Robbie E. Okay, so TNAshop.com for all your Valentine's Day needs. Get that loved one your OMG WTH t-shirt, your Crimson t-shirt, or maybe your Abyss mask for that lady in your life.
Nothing says I love you like, oh my God, what the fuck? Telling you. Romantique. So, and then I guess the next thing was Tanae narrating a recap of the show opening brawl. So, all that stuff I just said about how great it was to not have Tanae involved in that angle. Yep, right by the wayside goes that. And then Sting comes to the ring with James Storm looking just totally haggard. Looking like Merle Haggard.
He needed to drink some more beer after that brawl. Somebody done got whooped. It looked like it was him. He needed some. He needed a few beers to wash that down. Maybe put the cowboy hat back on, as you like to say. Got to wear the cowboy hat, the glasses. Yeah, he was looking rougher than Jeff, and that's saying something. But hey, if the point was he was supposed to be beat up, he looked every bit of it.
I think one thing that really helps him in selling being beat up is he's got a whole lot of hair, and your hair can do like weird haggard looking things, so that really helps the gimmick. In any event, Sting's out there with Storm, and Hardy calls out Bobby Roode and Bully Ray. They come out and fucking jump the other two, and it's a huge brawl. Sting tries to separate them. They keep brawling. Sting draws a line with his bat. They jump the line and attack each other. This goes on for a long time. I'm not complaining about it. It was actually...
Screw you and your freaking line!
What's that?
Screw you and your freaking line!
Why you let him talk?
Oh, he is. I think it's always funny when wrestlers holler stuff and it's not directly in the microphone. Like,
yes,
you're not supposed to hear it, but everybody can hear it. So, yeah. Screw you and your freaking line. Yeah, he was going to let Storm talk. And, yeah, he's hollering, "What'd you let him talk for? Let them fight." Yeah, so Bully Ray doing good. Yeah, they... So here's where I lost my shit when I'm watching it. Yeah, Sting sets up the tag team tables match with Cavs and Abs versus Meth Storm.
Yep.
So I just lost it because I'm like, wait, because everything up until this point, I'm like, okay, they're brawling around. They had the backstage brawl. Totally makes sense. You know, they're mad that they've been hating each other, and then I'm like, wait, you advertised this before the show started. 40 minutes later, you announce it. This is ridiculous. I said, if you want to do it every week and say, hey, this is our show, this is the preview for it, and then you're going to find out. But they don't. They play it as it's live. So pick a side and go with it. Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't care which one. I kind of would rather them admit that it's taped and use that to their advantage somehow. It doesn't have to be live, you know? Nobody watching it cares that it's not live. It's not like Raw. So, but, yeah, up to that point, this was four people acting for all the world like they knew they were going to face each other. So, totally stupid. Totally stupid. And then we go backstage to Alex Shelley, giving a brief little thing about how he's facing Zema Ion later. Alex Shelley's never looked worse. He just looks horrible. I hate his ring gear. I hate his hair. He looks like he's not into it at all. He looks like a guy that would love to be anywhere else. I don't see any purpose for him whatsoever right now. Your thoughts on him?
Well, he couldn't have possibly looked worse than he did last week, but yeah, his ring gear screams gay biker bar.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. Those guys really had something, and I don't know if he just changed his look. Cause he got, you know, guys sit at home, they get bored. Ah, I'll grow my hair out. I'll do this or do that. You know, I saw this kid on the street at the coffee shop looking like this. Maybe I'll try that out. Not liking it, but I'm glad he's back on TV because he is a talented guy. Maybe he'll straighten out the look a little bit. At least when he comes out for his match in a little bit, he doesn't point at his hand because, well, he's from Michigan, but Wisconsin's the real mitten now. We're the left mitten. So screw you, Michigan.
But he did that before his match.
I must have looked down. I didn't see the hand point.
Yeah, no, I was watching for it specifically so I could say exactly what you just said. Yeah, fuck you, Michigan. We're the hand.
Yeah, take that, Maze.
Mm-hmm, yeah. What you going to do about it, Maze?
Yeah.
There was a backstage segment with Eric Young. This was horrible and made me want to kill myself, so I won't say anything about it. Do you have anything to say about it?
Well, yeah. He thought a black guy was Sammy Davis Jr., which took me like 2 minutes afterwards to figure out who the hell he's talking about. Black guy with a mustache, obviously got to be Sammy Davis.
Yeah.
Winter and Skeletina seduce Eli, giving him a little rub down, rubbing him up. Love knees him in the crotch. But, of course, EY is a Boy Scout, always prepared, wearing the nut cup, pulls it out, probably sniffs it, I don't know, probably licked it. So they run away. Angelina Love's knee hurts. ODB comes in, talks about their tag match, something about his nuts cup. And commercial.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Yep. Okay, great. So then Alex Shelley beat Zema Ion in about 5 minutes. Good match. A little too quick for my taste. I'd rather TV matches go longer than that, but I understand you have you got to make room for those funny Eric Young skits. So no time to have a good wrestling match on the show. Alex Shelley, yeah, like I said, looks terrible doing anything other than wrestling right now. Totally uninspired, has like a dopey look on his face. His hair makes me want to just chop heads off of babies, you know, just do horrible things to innocent babies or something. But good match, and Shelley won with, I believe, the sliced bread for the 1-2
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah, sliced bread number two, which I thought was Kendrick's move. Which,
yep.
Hey, if Brian Kendrick no longer shows up on my TV, and that's the reason, then I'm all for Alex Shelley using that finishing move till from now until eternity. I can't stand Brian Kendrick. He had a good 2 month run when Big Zeke was reading children's books backstage with him. This match I thought was good. Like, it kind of reminded me of the old WCW Cruiserweight guys flying around.
Sure.
Zema Ion, though. There's only one true model in my mind, and it's Rick Martel. It's spraying the
yep.
arrogance and wearing the button that says, I'm a model. Until you have that button, that merit badge, okay, you're not a model, you're a poser. And it I thought it was kind of weirded out. He had his gear looked like he was wearing chaps.
Mm-hmm.
But Zema Ion, okay. I think a little too over the top, a little too cheese ball, but
yeah.
He might have something. We'll see. He's a young kid.
I like the way he carries himself, and he has a tremendous amount of charisma. And yes, every time I see him, I instantly go to the Rick Martel place. Not just because he's spraying stuff, but that's kind of how he carries himself. That's kind of what he's trying to do, is Rick Martel, I believe. Got a long way to go before he can be Rick Martel, but I see a lot of potential in him. So he is definitely one of my favorite parts about TNA right now. You get excited that there's hope there, you know? Later on in the show, we see Brutus Magnus, and that's another guy where I see hope with him, you know? There's a lot of guys like Crimson and Gunner where there's not a lot of hope, so definitely for Zema Ion right now. Moving along. Then we see AJ Styles with another one of those short backstage things. He's going to get to the bottom of his Frankie Kazarian thing today, which is exactly what he said last week. And as Dr. Phil would say, how did that work for you?
Yeah, there's only so many ways to flip a pancake.
Indeed. Tara backstage. Talking about Gail Kim, she's very excited about the match, blah, blah, blah. Quick little thing, not much to note there other than that, hey, it sets up the Knockouts title match, that's good. And then we see Eric Bischoff talking to the camera. One of those, like, early Horseman things where, like, you pay off the cameraman to follow you sort of thing. So he's got the cameraman following him into a gym where Garrett Bischoff is training. He's going to get to the bottom of who the mystery trainer is. Calls him a punk. That's like the funniest thing he did was, where's that punk training? You know, and the guy just answers him without reacting in any way whatsoever. You know, he's over there. Okay. So Eric yells at him, oh, we got to find out who this big trainer is. And Garrett smiles at him, points out the trainer. Eric freaks out and shoos the cameraman away before they can see the trainer on camera. Your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are that you glossed over one very important thing, which is they showed this whole thing twice.
They showed it all
except Garrett smiling and pointing. They showed it all but the last 30 seconds. They showed like the minute and a half before commercial. They came back, they replayed the whole thing and added 30 seconds onto it. And I don't even know, I guess I didn't look, was that, I don't know if that was the top of the hour, like that was what we're supposed to tune in and go, oh man. So yeah, either Eric is surprised to see his nephew Eugene, so they got a cousins tag team,
Eugene,
So Garrett wasn't training in the blow up bouncy house, so it probably wasn't Eugene. So probably the Hulkster hanging and banging. I can't wait to see the training videos, eating the raw eggs. Garrett playing the Gene Okerlund part would just be outstanding, making him run, wearing all the sweatsuits. But, yeah, that was apparently so great. They had to show it twice. They teased you before the commercial, came back, and teased you again to watch next week because we got to know who it is.
Very, very Nitro-esque, where they just replay something. You know how they tease? They did this all the time on Nitro. I don't know if you remember. They'd tease something. Coming up later in the show, they'd show a clip of it. And then the next time, coming up later in the show, and they'd show another clip of it. And by the time you got to the thing, you've seen most of it in clips already. So
yeah, the camera guy was so dumb that Eric looks, yet the camera guy doesn't look over with his, because he doesn't care who it is. He's just filming. But, yeah, I mean, I watched every WCW show. I used to watch, I used to tape both. I had a recording going once, or I would watch Raw and then record because Nitro was smart enough to replay. So I always watched both shows unless the VCR malfunctioned, which would drive me crazy. And to this day, kids don't understand VCRs because you always had to pray when you were gone that when you got home, it actually recorded.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. I got to the point where I would, put in an 8-hour tape and let it roll because I didn't trust myself in setting it to tape later, you know? So.
Yep.
But, that reminds me, though, of back in 1981 when Metallica asked me to be their bass player. Which reminds me of the time back in 1987 when Metallica asked me to be their bass player, which I can't help but be reminded of the time in 1995 when Metallica asked me to be their bass player. Of course, I'd be remiss to point out the time in 2003, though, when Metallica asked me to be their bass player. So, lots of good memories coming out of that segment.
Brother. Yes, Keep asking. Eventually, they'll say yes.
Yeah. Mhm.
That's how I got my wife.
Oh, there used to be a commercial for Social Security or something, and the guy's telling a story. I asked my wife to marry me 3 times before she said yes. Ha 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 ha. Why are you embarrassing yourself on TV like that, dude? Just chill out. So, moving along, the next thing was a tag match of some description. I don't give a fuck. Your thoughts on this?
Okay, everybody. Skeletina and Winter versus ODB and EY. Okay, I fast-forwarded through because I also, like Dusty, do not give a fuck about Eric Young. Mm. But I checked it, and they did a full first 3 minutes of the match with EY acting retarded with Earl Hebner.
Yeah.
Doing all of EY's retardation stuff for a full 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then ODB gets the tag. We get 4 minutes of action after that. So 7 minutes of the match, 3 minutes of EY being EY, okay, with his buddy Earl. So we get 4 minutes of ODB against the other two. It ends with a double airplane spin. ODB does the world's slowest airplane spin. Okay, that helicopter could never have gotten off the ground.
No.
She does her whatever move that is. Oh, and there's also a ODB doesn't want a hot tag. Okay, she just is hulking up. She needs that hot tag, but doesn't get the tag. EY just hands her the flask. Okay, she chugs away, and she got the win. Don't know who she pinned. Doesn't matter. Awful.
Don't
Next
care.
Thing. Calves and abs in the lot. Calves and abs in the locker room. Yep, go. Reminded you of what?
Reminds me of that scene, the famous scene in Killer Tomatoes, where the tomato causes the helicopter to slowly spin out of control and crash to the ground. If you've never seen Killer Tomatoes, fuck you, because that's the best movie ever. I'm not kidding you when I tell you that match felt like it went 20 or 30 minutes. It really did. Like, I got very itchy and nervous when that match was going on because I knew I didn't want to fast forward it in case something actually happened during it. But at the same time, you know nothing good is going to happen, and you're just sitting there like you're trapped, like a hostage video. That was terrible. Backstage, Bully Ray and Bobby Roode talking about their match later. Bully Ray once again foreshadowing that he's going to challenge for the title. Well, you're the champ, you know, for now. The hell does that mean? Nothing, just forget about it, man. So.
Yeah, you go first. No, you go first. Let's go at the same time. Ready?
One.
One.
Two.
Two. Three.
Roots like,
you were
what
supposed
the hell?
You were supposed to go.
Yeah, I love those two together, and I love Bully Ray. I think he's the best heel in the business right now. He totally gets it. He talks and talks and talks and shows ass when he needs to show ass, and his wrestling is solid. I love Bully Ray right now. Nothing wrong with that. Then we go to a video package talking about the tag team title feud. Morgan and Crimson against Magnus and Joe. That sets up Morgan versus Joe with their respective partners in the corners. Match goes about 5 minutes with Morgan winning. Solid, unspectacular.
Yeah, Joe, it looked like he had his own towel, like
yep.
Not just the plain white. But I checked the TNA shop website. Does not exist. Not sold out. Just doesn't exist. But Crimson's new catchphrase is death before dishonor. So
yep.
Stealing ROH pay-per-view. I think ROH pay-per-view, right? And you can buy a Crimson death before dishonor shirt because he was in the military. So
mm-hmm.
He's a very honorable man. Remember that when he turns heel, that we should kill him.
What do you mean? I thought a tag team was going to stay together forever in TNA. I don't know what you're talking about. Anywho, we see AJ Styles walking backstage because you need constant proof that Vince Russo is still with this company. Then you see James Storm and Jeff Hardy talking about their tables match later. Jeff Hardy makes a hand gesture referring to Bully Ray making a table break. Very cute Jeff Hardy. And then AJ Styles in the ring for the 9 billionth week in a row trying to figure out why Kazarian turned on him. Of course, Kazarian comes out with the brown blazer. And
but he didn't.
The blazer does all the talking for Kazarian. Your thoughts here?
Wait. Well, here's the thing. He didn't come out with the brown blazer. He was wearing a plain black blazer, which just ruined his gimmick.
Of course. I'm going to keep calling him the Brown Blazer, though, because I don't really care. You know, I don't respect him in any way whatsoever. So I'm ignoring what he was wearing. He was and always will be, to me, the Brown Blazer. He's trying to throw people off the scent by wearing a different color blazer, but we all know he's the real Brown Blazer.
Yeah, he stuck his neck out for us on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. He stuck half his body out. So, Daniels cuts a terrible promo, basically exposing everything that's wrong with TNA, that they can't book baby faces properly. Baby faces are whiners and complainers. We've seen it with Jeff Hardy over the last few weeks, and we've seen it with AJ Styles over the past several years. Something goes wrong, and they just whine and complain about it. And Daniels pointing that out does really no good whatsoever. It just exposes that there's been bad writing on the show. Also, Daniels can't talk. So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, they did the thing where AJ turns his back and says, "Come on, I'm going to give my back to you. And you can take my head off," which they did the exact same thing. I don't know how long ago it was.
Yeah.
I know it was with Sting, and I think it was with Big Lazy. So I guess if that was the case, it was over a year ago. But it was Sting gives somebody the bat, hit me. I know everybody does it, but it seems like they've done it a lot in TNA.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Daniels runs in. AJ turns around, beats him up. And then Daniel says, "Hey, you're going to wrestle Kaz. You're going to ask for a match at the pay-per-view." So
yeah,
we're getting – so, and he apparently has something held over Kaz. So I don't know if, you know, Kaz is cheating on his wife or – which I guess would be Tracy Brooks. So actually she was cheating on him, so this makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
Anyway, back to the regular scheduled program.
Throughout this segment, Kazarian is making facial expressions like Sam Winchester on the show Supernatural, like when they just seen a demon or something, and he does these big, like, huffy puffy facial expressions of, you know, like, ooh, that kind of stuff, like, oh my god, what did I just see? He's making facial expressions like that, which proves that he's a B-level actor at best. Yep. Oh, on ProWrestling.net, the reviewer said he looks like a lost puppy. So that's of note. After that, we go to the tables match, which goes about 15 minutes into an overrun. Storm and Hardy win the match with Rude going through the table. This was a solid match, too. Most of the in-ring work on this show was fine, in my opinion. So,
yeah. I thought it was all right. They did the split screen thing. I don't know what your thoughts are. I don't like the split screen. Well, I like that they do a split screen. I don't like that they do it, and then they have those like blue flames on the screen, which are distracting.
That's innovative technology.
Yeah. Let's show how great we are, because they really went heavy on the video packages. So Keith in the truck has been working overtime, probably getting a raise. So at least they didn't do when they do like the War Games match where they have like six split screens. I did notice there was a guy in the front row during the main event with an ink T-shirt on. I don't know if those are on clearance or what, but he definitely stood out. At the end, yeah, Hardy holds Rude on the table. Storm drops an elbow, which looked like gravity was sucking him down. Kind of a Tommy Dreamer elbow. No lift, which, hey, no big deal. Bully Ray comes in with the chair afterwards, wears out both guys, does a middle rope powerbomb on with Jeff, Mae Young style.
Yep.
And I guess that's how they ended it, with Hardy supposedly being injured.
Yeah.
Don't know where do you think they're going with the four guys in the main event and Sting? I was thinking Bully Ray and Sting and then a triple threat, but it almost looks like they might go with Storm and Rude, which I think would be awful with this little build, since they've kept it pretty ambiguous, and then go with Hardy, Bully Ray. unless Hardy's hurt and he's not going to wrestle at the pay-per-view. So maybe I answered my question too much, so go for it.
I'm going to ask a question and then totally answer it.
I didn't really want to know what you thought. I just wanted to tell everybody what I thought by being nice about it.
No, you were writing
anyway.
Your thesis paper out loud. So,
yeah.
Now, my thought was they're moving Hardy out of the way so they can do Storm versus Rude at the pay-per-view, which, on that, my original thought, as I said last week, was the three-way dance. I thought that's where they were going. Now I don't know. Unless they're still going to do that with Ray in the match? Question mark? Or are they going to just do Ray versus Hardy for a month and put off Hardy getting another title shot until the next month? Question mark? Not really sure what they're doing right now.
Yeah, I said it's... And I guess I don't know how long they have until the next pay-per-view, if it's 2 weeks from now or it's an extended one. So they might, and I don't even know if next week's show is taped, which I would think not, because isn't this the third show after the pay-per-view, I believe? This
yes.
is our third show, and I think we did it after the pay-per-view. So I don't. They usually don't tape four, so this should be. The end of their first set of tapings. So maybe next week we will get more Pope Devon, more Steiner,
yeah,
more Tessmacher, less Anderson would be nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I thought turns out they did the tag match that I would have saved for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Since their pay-per-views don't draw anything, maybe you do the tag match and then set up for a big TV main event where you can
yeah.
get that that elusive 1.25 rating.
Right. Yeah, they have no reason to put huge matches on pay-per-view if nobody's buying them. They need to build up a lot of trust before they can get to that point. I'm not sure if they'll ever get to that point, so there's no reason to blow through things as quickly as they did here in my international house of humble pancakes. So, overall thoughts on the show?
Well, like you said, in-ring action, good, except for that one match that we really don't want to talk about.
Yep.
Nope. That women's match coming along good. I like that Gail Kim's the champ and she hasn't been wrestling. I like when they set up things with the contenders and leave the champ off and kind of make them special, you know, whether they are a special champ or not. I guess we haven't seen anything. The progress in the tag team feud, there's only two tag teams in TNA. I do like that they're keeping the focus on a core group of guys that said they're not bringing everybody to the tapings, which is fine. That means they don't, because when they do that, they cram everybody on. We didn't get any Austin Aries this week, but we got Shelley setting that up. So they are building towards the pay-per-view, except it just seems like they kind of do the backwards thing where they have set up all the undercard matches, but haven't let us know what the main event is. And the main event's kind of what sells you, and then the undercard is usually what, you know, makes you go, yeah, I'll get it or not. You know, if you're inclined, you got to be inclined in the first place by the main event, and then the undercard can maybe be the tipping point. So they do have that established. I like what they're doing besides, said the EY stuff and the Bischoff saga. But other than that, so I guess, you know, that's probably, you know, 70% of the show is good, and that 30% drags it down. What are your thoughts? One last thing. What are your thoughts on the whole Ric Flair, WWF Hall of Fame, TNA? What should TNA do? Do they have any leverage whatsoever? Should if his contract runs through the Hall of Fame, like, should they demand money? Do you think they should demand money? People have brought up a talent exchange, you know, letting somebody come on TNA TV and wrestle one match. Should they do anything? Can they do anything? What would you do?
A talent exchange would never happen. WWE would just simply never agree to that. They should be entitled to some kind of money, and I think that would be what they would get. some type of money, buying out his contract in some way. TNA basically doesn't have any leverage because, like, when Kevin Nash wanted to go, he could just go, you know? TNA always looks really impotent in cases like this, but the best they can do is get some money from WWE, and if they were smart, they'd have Gunnar destroy him and help make him look better before he leaves. So that's what I would do anyway. Create a reason for him leaving. Gunnar turns on his mentor. Oh my God, he's out of control, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I would do.
All right. Yeah. I don't think they have much to do like that they can do, but you know, it is interesting that a guy's under contract. He said he's going, you know, and what are they going to do about it? Because he's the man, he's God. You can't tell him what to do. He doesn't care. Obviously doesn't care the way he spends money. Like Ric Flair has no repercussions in life. He does what he wants, when he wants, and, you know, screw you if you don't like it, because he's always going to get paid. So I guess that's what you get to do when you're, 65 and the man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to die flat broke, and he won't give two fucks. So, and I guess that's the right way to go. So God bless him. Yeah, overall, most of the show was really good. This was like a good, bad show, much in the same way Boston is a good, bad band. Boston is probably the best bad band ever, and that's what this show was, like a really good, bad show. I would give it like maybe a C- or something. A lot of it was really good, but the stuff that was bad was like, whoa, is this bad? So... And Mike Tenay just is killing me. He's slowly destroying me in every way possible. And I know Aspie Alley loves the guy because he's friends with him, but let's get real here. The guy sucks, and he's always sucked. He's a terrible announcer, and he's dragging the show down. So, and I'm going to say it every week until they get the fuck rid of him, or at least bring back Don West, who could work with him. You know?
Yeah, when you have one bad announcer and the other guy who was a good announcer now getting the paycheck, doesn't care, you can't blame the guy for not caring. If they're not going to hold you to a standard, then, you know, hey, show up, wear your leather jacket, wear your sunglasses. They sell Taz t-shirts, which kind of amuses me for a guy who just sits in the booth, but you can buy Taz merchandise.
Yep.
So, hey, I don't blame him. You know, he's not talking about yam bags anymore, but he's letting the pigeons loose and all kinds of stuff. He's having fun, at least. I mean, you can tell he's laughing. I guess he's got to see the bad stuff because he's laughing about it sometimes. So can't blame him. But Tenay sits in on the booking meetings, is a yes man. If you're not going to speak up and you're supposed to be so damn smart, then don't go to the meetings.
No, Mike Tenay is historically one of the most spineless fucking cockroaches in the wrestling business. You know, you can talk all you want, oh, I wish they'd do it that way, but you're at the fucking booking meetings there, Johnny Rollover, and you're not doing a goddamn thing about it. You hate Vince Russo, but you're fucking working with him. You fucking spineless bitch. So, you got nothing to say, Mike Tenay. You're just as bad as all of them. Probably worse. So, but yeah, speaking of t-shirts, the person with the ink shirt probably took advantage of that deal they had. What was it, like buy six for the price of one or something? So
yeah, brown bag special.
Yep. Mhm. Grab yourself an ink t-shirt for free. Nothing wrong with that. Be the coolest kid on your block with one of those on. So
that's right. You can pick up chicks at the club in Orlando.
Yeah.
Ink t-shirts, some Mickey Mouse ears, Dwight Howard shorts. We're good.
Yeah. You can wear your Dwight Howard Los Angeles Clippers jersey.
Not happening.
Okay. Anyway. Anyway. Any other thoughts before we say goodbye?
No, that's it, I guess. One more show in the books. Hope everybody's enjoying us so far. If you're not, keep your mouth shut. Don't tell everybody else we suck.
Yeah.
Okay, just keep on downloading.
I mean, that's all you have to do. You don't even have to listen. Just keep downloading it. Everything will be just fine. Eat the poison. Put a smile on your face. In any event, for Matt Fanatic, I am Dusty Giebing. This has been TNA Audio number 3, and we'll try to do better next time.